ஐ ஆல்ரெடி வந்து ஸ்டார்ட் ரெக்கார்டிங் லைக் சோ ஓகே ஹியர் வி ஆர் ரெக்கார்டிங் அனதர் ஷார்ட்ஸ் ஆஃப்டர் many many recording challenges and the reason I started with that absurd laugh is because I've been reading a lot of absurd stuff starting with I didn't even know such a thing existed you know about and we kind of maybe touched upon it once or twice that there was this whole London beer flood in 1914 which actually there was 1 million liters of beer that ran through the streets of London and 8 people died I don't know if they died from drinking or from whatever but there you are there was the dancing plague in 1518 where people all of a sudden started dancing they danced so much that a few got heart attacks strange
was there a particular dance or it was they were all doing tango samba or it was just free form
the strange thing Nilesh is that actually it went on for a very long time
wow.
it was like I think it went on from July to September of 1518 I mean I can't even believe
people that. Danced for 3 months
that's a lot of dancing Yeah, that is why they died of heart attacks.
They would have.
I don't know if it was the same person dancing.
They should have died of exhaustion.
No, because it's a plague, na? So it was. So I think it was a contagious dance movement. So it's like I start dancing, then you start. So you know that's why it's called a plague and not just a little disease. So anyway, so I mean, yeah, that just kind of gives you an idea of what's happening.
So Samiran, that plague in today's world is called viral. Okay, the viral videos are the same.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
excellent. So I also came across this great interview by Brian Cox. Okay. So he was asked that, you know, what should we, you know, what do you, you know, how can you solve the world's problems and stuff? So he said, you know what we should do? We should put all the politicians in a spacecraft and send them away. He said, send them away? Me? Send them to outer space. He said, why? He said, no, I'll tell you later. He said, but what about coming back? He said, yeah, maybe some of them could come back, but not all. But anyway, so that was the hilarious. But the interesting thing there, which I really kind of took away, was the fact that Brian Cox has actually spoken to lots of astronauts, right from the Apollo age downwards. So what he said was really interesting and too profound for me, but I'll say it anyway. So he said that, you know, he was speaking to this Saudi Arabian astronaut. And that guy said that, you know, when he takes the first orbit of the Earth, he looks for his own village, you know. Then he takes another orbit and he looks for Mecca, you know. Then he looks for Saudi Arabia. Then after, you know, 10, 15 orbits, all he can see is Earth, you know. And then it slowly dawns on them that the fact that, you know, this is our only planet. This is the place we all have in the billions and millions of stars and all. So his point was that, you know, to solve the world's problems, you know, you need to send all these politicians into space so that they get a perspective of what the world is and, you know, try to solve a problem. So, I mean, I think Brian Cox is probably part Irish and he has a much better way of delivering this. But the essence of the matter was that, you know, to solve the world's problems, you need to send people into space.
Sorry, it just makes me feel like this is exactly what must have happened in boardrooms. And that's where the phrase 30,000 feet got coined because, you know, they couldn't think of outer space. But 30,000 feet is also high enough for you to look at it in its perspective. And now they're only thinking 30,000 feet and nothing is actually happening otherwise. So, no, I'm not even sure. I don't think even sending them into space, the politicians, is going to help any of us. So, God bless. Sorry, Nilesh, you were saying something.
No, I was saying that if you remember, I mean, Samiran had this great idea of cleaning up Earth by sending. It's like, you know, when you move houses to clean and set up your own house. So yeah, maybe there are.
Space is the answer to everything.
So let me go ahead with what I selected for this episode of Shorts. We have talked so much about e-commerce, ONDC. So I thought, let me go ahead and search out what qualifies probably as the first e-commerce transaction. And there are many variations to it. So I'll go one by one. So first one is as old as, you know, ARPANET, where Stanford University and MIT University students decided to exchange weed, and they did this over ARPANET in 1971 and 72, between 71 and 72. But this cannot be termed as an e-commerce or even commerce transaction, because they essentially used ARPANET to just decide on a meeting place and then physically went there and exchanged the weed. So that was like first kind of trade on net. Then it came, something in UK where in 1984, I think, a 72-year-old lady used a device called Videotex. And essentially it is Videotex is something like we know teletext. Videotext is you hook a dumb terminal. In this case, it was a television hooked to through a modem to a network. And she ordered some margarine, eggs and cornflakes from local grocery store via phone lines. But again, this was not an e-commerce transaction because she paid in cash and the groceries were hand delivered, right? So many people say this is not e-commerce. So finally, one that qualifies as an e-commerce transaction is in 1994, when a person called Dan Cohen created a website called NetMarket, and he sold a CD of Sting's 10 Summoner's Tale to a friend in Philadelphia. And the friend paid $12 or something plus shipping using credit card online, securely. So when you say e-commerce transaction, the payment and the logistics of, shipping the CD and all. So 1994 qualifies as the first e-commerce transaction. But depending on how you slice it or dice it, essentially first internet transaction involved weed, rock, music, or food. So that's
the innovation needs you to be in a different state of mind.
Totally agree with you. So I'm going to tell you all a story, actually. So I don't know, did either of you play frisbees when you were young?
Not the greatest frisbee player, but yeah.
Yeah, but you must have played frisbee when you were young, right? All of us have done it. Hey, listen, if you're an Indian and you've gone for a family picnic, one of the games that you played was the frisbee. Okay, let's admit to it. Our age might show, but that's the truth. So, Frederick Morrison is actually credited with inventing the frisbee in 1940s, okay? And he developed a plastic flying disc, which he called the flying saucer and things like that. Then there was another guy called Ed Hedrick, who's considered to be the father of the disc golf. And he was actually instrumental in popularizing the modern frisbee as we know it. But why am I telling you this story? So I found it really interesting that Ed Hedrick, because he went on to create the sport of frisbee and all of that, when he died in 2002, his final wish was to have his ashes turned into a frisbee.
Excellent. Excellent.
So not only did they make one frisbee, but they made multiple frisbees and they gave it to people, family and friends and things like that. Not all of his ashes were used. Some of his ashes were used, but they were used to make multiple frisbees to be donated. And then I figured that, so that got me curious, saying, how can it, did only he do this, where his invention, his ashes went into his inventions? And then I realized that as I was searching more, there are many more people, many more inventors who have converted their ashes into their inventions. Okay, so the belief is that in Disney, there's quite a few of them. So I thought, if this is interesting, you should go and search for it, that how many inventors actually put their ashes into their own inventions. As long as they don't put it into my whiskey bottle, I think
that. Yeah, I'm just thinking that supposing what would we do that will qualify like that? That could we make something into three techies banter? I don't know.
The logo will become with our ashes. That's the only thing I can think of right now. We can convert the logo make it whatever, compressed ashes or something, and over the years it'll become diamonds or some shit like that. So Nilesh, this is actually on the back, since you said it's very Samiran-like. So this is Samiran putting me on that trip where I went and searched for a few crazy things, and then at one point in time, ChatGPT told me that I was breaking all rules of ChatGPT on my search. So I thought they were going to kind of put my account on hold and boot me out, saying you're not going to be allowed on ChatGPT.
No, you could be next generation beta developer for the ChatGPT now, yeah? Because you're testing the limits of ChatGPT.
Correct. For sure. I'm definitely checking whether I'm allowed to use certain words or not, at least. And at what point in time do they actually tell me this is not acceptable? So yeah, it was fun. So that brings us to another mad episode of Shorts for You. I'm sure in our next shots, Samiran will have something even more esoteric than sending our politicians to space to give them a perspective that Earth is one planet and that they all need to work together to make Earth succeed. How?
Or they will not be brought back home.
I don't know whether that's utopian or dystopian, but it is very, very... I'm quite sure. I'm willing to bet all my money on it that it won't happen. So on that happy note, we look forward to seeing you on our next shorts. And stay tuned for our really interesting episodes on Three Techies Banter, the long ones. We're speaking to some really interesting guests, and I'm sure you will love to listen to those. Bye, everyone, for now.